gonna wean from the world. Wean from the world. We're gonna get weaned from the world. Weaned. Wean me. Wean me from the world. I want to be weaned from the world. Hey everybody, this is Martin Zunder, feeling my oats today, kind of, sort of. We're learning how to be weaned from the world. We're no longer going to suck the breast of this current wicked era. We are being weaned from the treasures of Egypt as Moses was. Moses said, to heck with it. He disowned the term son of Pharaoh's daughter, preferring rather to be maltreated with the people of God than to have a temporary enjoyment of sin, deeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked away to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the fury of the king, for he is staunch as seeing the invisible. Didn't see it, it was as seeing it. By faith he has the Passover made and the pouring of blood against the door jams, lest the exterminator of the firstborn may come into contact with them. But he didn't, because of the blood on the doorpost. By faith, they crossed the Red Sea as through dry land, attempting which the Egyptians were swallowed up. The Egyptians had a stupid faith. They thought it was going to hold up that water. The Israelites had an intelligent faith based on a proclamation of God through the spokesperson, Moses. Now listen to A.E. Knox commentary. Now I'm reading a concordant commentary of Hebrews 11 starting with verse 24. And you're going to see why I got so excited about that word wean at the beginning. Love that word. Wean me. Hebebe. A wean me. I love that word. Here it is in the concordant commentary. Moses is a marvelous example of the power of faith to wean from the world and its allurements. To wean from the world. Love that alliteration there. Moses is a marvelous example of the power of faith, God-given faith, to wean from the world and its allurements with the brightest prospects possible. He, Moses, deliberately turns his back on the treasures of Egypt and possibly the throne itself in order to share in the aeonian reward of the faithful. Had he enjoyed the temporary pleasures of Egypt, his name would probably, listen to this, this is so true. I want you to apply this to yourself. This is the briefest, most temporary pleasures we have here on earth. Listen to this. Had Moses enjoyed the temporary pleasures of Egypt, his name would probably have been forgotten long ago. And that's true. Forgotten. You never would have heard the name of Moses. And what a reward he's going to enter into when he wakes up from the dead, enters into the kingdom. Had he enjoyed the temporary pleasures of Egypt, his name would probably have been forgotten long ago. Yet now, his fame and memory are enshrined in the heart of the human race. And also in motion pictures. The Ten Commandments. Charlton Heston. What will be his reward in the resurrection? And Knock has an exclamation point here. What will be his reward? Can you imagine what it'll be? And then this, Moses feared when he found that his attempt to help his brethren became known. Reference Exodus 2:14. He tried to kill the Egyptian. He did kill the Egyptian who was hassling one of his people. And we would naturally suppose that it was fear that drove him to the backside of the desert. But we are assured that he did not fear, though he fled. He did not fear. That's what the account says here. Let's go back here. By faith, verse 27, he left Egypt not being afraid of the fury of the king. He was not afraid. So maybe he was afraid of some kind of retribution from some of the rogue Egyptians working in the stone quarry. But we're assured he did not fear, though he fled. Far greater still must have been the faith that stood firm before Pharaoh. Yeah, no kidding. That faith that prepared the Passover That took faith. Talked about that yesterday. That led the people out of the land in defiance of the forces of Egypt. Vast army coming after them. And brought the people into the wilderness through the Red Sea. Knox says concerning that wilderness, the wilderness seems to be almost devoid of faith. The account of the wandering in the wilderness was devoid of faith. It was faith that brought Moses out into the wilderness. Yet, faith cannot be imparted except by God. Moses had the faith, the people did not. For the enumeration of faith's victories passes from Egypt to the land. Indeed, with faith, there would not have been the wanderings in the wilderness. That's true. They wandered in the wilderness for the lack of faith. And this is the inspired type of which the Pentecostal area is the antitype. We've talked about this. The wandering in the wilderness corresponds spiritually to the Acts administration, to Israel wandering in the wilderness following the declaration of God, the sacrifice of the Messiah, the testimony of the Holy Spirit. Had the nation believed, the kingdom would have come. Now the few faithful who are left are pointed to the worthies who, like themselves, have nothing but God's bare word, yet believed it and anticipated its fulfillment, seldom receiving the benefits which it promised. Strong words, nothing but God's bare word. And there are faithful few, Joshua and Caleb and Moses, the faithful few. Well, Moses didn't even come through, but Joshua and Caleb came through. They were the faithful few. Likewise, in the Pentecostal era, the nation apostatized. The nation killed the servants of Christ. The nation rejected the testimony of Peter. And yet there were still a faithful few who held true to the promises, and it is to these Paul is writing and encouraging them. All right, now we're going to talk about Rahab. Speaking of the spies, by faith the walls of Jericho fall, being surrounded on 7 days. Verse 31, Hebrews 11, by faith Rahab, the prostitute, perished not with the stubborn, receiving the spies with peace. Rahab, you gotta love Rahab the prostitute. Not the ex-prostitute, but the prostitute. Now, she was a run-of-the-mill prostitute. By that, I mean she was not a cult prostitute. Because this wouldn't have been going on with a cult prostitute. A cult prostitute, there's a separate name for a woman of this nature in the Hebrew scriptures, was one who brought worshipers to a false god. People became linked to a false god via sexual intercourse with a cult or a temple prostitute. There's another Hebrew word for your run-of-the-mill loose woman prostitute men paid to have sex, not associated with the worship of a deity. That was a different ballgame altogether. That was Rahab. This is so interesting because this same woman, although there's some critical objections to this, but I believe this same woman is the Rahab mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Let's look into her story, because it's very interesting. This is Joshua chapter 2, and the Hebrews were encamped at Shittim, and they were ready to come across to the Promised Land, and the first city they're going to overtake, or the first city they're going to run into, was Jericho. So they're camped here across the Jordan River from Jericho, ready to cross, and Joshua, as a final preparation to war, he sends out two spies so that he can suss out the military strength of Jericho. So these spies, they came to Rahab's house. What do you think they were doing in Rahab's? I don't know. It's, you know, hey, they're at Rahab's house. Let's just say being entertained. And Rahab's house happened to be built into the city wall. So now, while these men were at Rahab's house, probably playing solitaire or parcheesi or some other such game, the soldiers came, and because they heard that these spies were in town, so they came to look for them. And she hid them under bundles of flax on the roof, took them up to the roof and had a bunch of grain up there in bundles of flax, hid them under there. And the men were not allowed to come up there. Nobody was allowed to enter into a woman's house, see? So they knocked at the door. Hey, we hear the spies might be up here. No, they went that away. You know, the old Westerns. They went that away, and she sends them in the wrong direction. So after leaving then, the spies safely escaped Jericho, and they promised to spare Rahab and her family when they came to take the city, because there was going to be a massacre. They just told her to hang a red cord out the window, and then she'd be spared. And I don't know about this. Some people claim that the symbol of the red cord is related to the practice of the red light district today. The red light district, you know, it harkens back to this red cord lowered from Rahab's window. This is a great woman here, a great woman. And again, she is a prostitute, not an ex-prostitute. You know, this does away with the whole idea that you have to clean up your life to be acceptable to God. She was a loose woman. It wasn't the most noble reputation, but it was the most noble occupation, but it was an occupation, wasn't it? So what did Rahab actually tell the spies? This is amazing. This is in Joshua chapter 2, verses 9 through 13. She said this, quote, "I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us." Because she's living in this town, and people are buzzing because these Israelites are marching around Jericho, right? 7 times a day for 7 days, something like that, bunch of sevens in there. And she says, "A great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan. You completely destroyed those guys. When we heard it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven. He's God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I've shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." And they said that they would. They promised her. They promised her that they would. And that's exactly what happened. When the city of Jericho fell, read it in Joshua chapter 6, Rahab and her whole family were preserved according to the promise of those spies. They were true to their word. And Rahab and her family were incorporated into the Jewish people, which was very unusual because usually when you sack a town, you destroy everybody. But God called her out and her entire family, and she was saved, and they became proselytes of Judaism. And this Rahab is mentioned in the Gospel of Matthew as an ancestor of Jesus Christ. She's in the genealogy in chapter 1 of the book of Matthew. It's amazing. She married Salmon, who was of the tribe of Judah, and they had Boaz. Boaz, of course, a progenitor of David. So this woman, this prostitute, is in the line, in the royal line of not only David, but Jesus Christ, our Messiah. And it was faith that she hid those spies. Don't you think she had a fear of the soldiers that came looking for them? I'm sure there was a standing order. Find those spies at all costs. She lied. It was a lie. She said they went that away. It was a lie. And yet, God kind of overlooked it, didn't he? Yes, he did. It was a lie for a noble cause. And it took faith to do that. And God is a rewarder of faith. That's our lesson here with Rahab. Several lessons here is that people are flawed by design. God uses people who are flawed by design. And God delivers those who believe his promises.